Thank you to all of you for being here. I had someone tell me last week on the way out, they said, Pastor, a sermon should never be more than 7 minutes long. The Pope came out and said that last week, and I just thought you should know that. So I gave them the address of St. Hubert's. But I did decide to, if maybe you have a better chance of staying awake if I put a pencil and a little homework in your hand. So you should have your bulletin close and that pencil that the ushers gave you close in your hand. That what we're talking about this morning, the title of this morning's sermon, is putting worry in its place. And to help us in this endeavor, we have three things. We have the words of Jesus. We have a ledger, and we'll talk more about that. And we have our assigned text from the 23rd Psalm that Donna read so beautifully for us. So let's start there with that 23rd Psalm. What better place to find comfort and strength could there possibly be than this familiar old piece of poetry? A familiar old piece of poetry that has been read and recited and memorized for nearly 3,000 years. Now that sentence alone is amazing. Let's not just pass over it. Let's ponder it for a moment. 3,000 years. The United States is less than 250 years old. The 23rd Psalm has been read and recited and memorized for 3,000 years. Do you think that people will be listening to, reciting, and memorizing Gershwin tunes or Beatles songs or the rap lyrics of Macklemore 3,000 years from now? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. Ask me at the coffee hour in 3,000 years. The 23rd Psalm is perhaps the most familiar piece of literature, of poetry ever written. And it will offer us aid today as we seek to put worry in its place. The 23rd Psalm is a poem that is built around a nugget right in the middle, a nugget of comfort and promise and truth, putting worry in its place. If we are to do this, then it will be helpful to first put our worries in perspective. And that is where the ledger comes in. There is a half sheet in your bulletin, one side the order of service, the other side is for you to take notes and do a little work. So what is a ledger? Well, it is a flat stone slab that covers a tomb. Just take a look. Did you know that? That's called a ledger. Now see, you've learned something already today. But that's a pretty hard thing to preach on. So we're going to look at a more common definition of the word ledger, and that would be a book of financial accounts. It is an accounting of credits and debits. It tracks how money is spent and earned, revenues and expenses. Now, for the accountants in the room, and I know we have a few, yes, I'm very aware that what I have constructed on your bulletin insert is not exactly a ledger. Perhaps it's not a ledger at all. But it's a pretty great word, is it not? Ledger? So maybe this little device on the back of your bulletin is going to help us to put worry in its place. Let's begin by filling in the blanks. On the left side of your sheet, you see the letters MWA, so go ahead and fill that in. Most worried about. Now, after you put that down, most worried about, I want you to take just a minute, and right off the top of your head, I want you to put down, let's say, three things that you're most worried about in your life or in our world right now. Now, the right side of your paper has three more letters, MTF. So fill that in, most thankful for. So on that side of the ledger, or whatever it is, take a moment and write down a few things, just a few things that you're most thankful for today. Now, I know you don't have time to do all of this right now. I would encourage you to continue this little exercise at home later when you have a little more time and focus, but just write down a couple things that you're really thankful for. Now, Now, as you gaze at this ledger, once you complete it tonight, what you're going to have is you're going to have a look at the credits and the debits in your life. And I would like you to consider, as you do so, how your list on both sides might change in the next 3 or 4 years. How many of your worries will still be there in 3 or 4 years? And if you had constructed this list 5 or 10 years ago in your life, wherever you were 5 or 10 years ago, would any of your current worries have been with you 5 or 10 years ago? Well, probably some of them. We never quit worrying about our children, after all, or our grandchildren. That's kind of a lifelong sentence that comes with the title of mom or dad. Now your blessings, the things that you're most thankful for, how many of those that are there today would have been present in your lives 5 or 10 years ago? And how many of those do you expect to be present in your life 3 years from now? Now, as we think about that left side, those things we're worried about, our point this morning is not to diminish or to discount or to make light of your worries. They may or may not be a real threat to you, but they are yours. Our task is not to convince you that they don't exist. Our task, remember, is to put worry in its place. In a few minutes, we're going to finish off this sermon by filling in the remaining blanks on your worksheet. But that'll be in a few minutes. Putting worry in its place. Back to the 23rd Psalm. The 23rd Psalm may be the most famous, oft-quoted poem of all time. But without question, if I were to ask you, what's the most famous sermon of all time, the most famous, oft-quoted sermon of all in human history, that sermon would undoubtedly be Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. It was his first sermon. It laid the groundwork for his entire ministry that would follow. It's found beginning in the 5th chapter of the Gospel of Matthew. And in that sermon are amazing things like the Beatitudes. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. You'll also find in that sermon the Lord's Prayer. President Jimmy Carter quoted this sermon once, and it got him in trouble for being too honest. Times have certainly changed. But by any measure, the Sermon on the Mount is an incredible sermon. And in this sermon, among other things, Jesus addresses human anxiety. The human anxiety that comes to all of us. The lost sleep, the nail biting, the lost energy, and the missed opportunities that come to us with worry. In this sermon, Jesus says this, "Do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will bring worries of its own. Today's trouble is enough for today." Now notice that Jesus did not tell us not to worry. That would be impossible. It would be against our human nature. If Jesus told me not to worry at all ever, that would be one more thing that I had to feel guilty about. One more thing that I could never achieve. It would add to my burden instead of releasing my burden. Jesus did not say not to worry, but he also did not say that we can sit idly by, trusting that God will just take care of all of our problems either. I got to tell you, I worried a lot about this sermon this morning. I spent most of the week kind of thinking to myself, I have nothing left to tell these people. And you're listening right now saying, I think he's right. But what happened is I worried a lot about this sermon all week long, and it gave me great motivation to try to get it figured out and get it done. What Jesus was doing this at this point of his sermon was attempting to put worry in its proper place. Worry is unavoidable. It's a part of every human journey. And worry is not always bad. Worry in its proper place can be a good thing. Jesus did not say, do not worry. He said, do not worry about tomorrow. Do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will bring worries of its own. Now, in a very similar vein, the great American patriot and philosopher and inventor, Benjamin Franklin, said this, "Do not anticipate trouble or worry about what may never happen. And then he ended with this great line, keep it in the sunlight. Keep it in the sunlight. What does that mean? Keep it in the sunlight. Don't let your worries paralyze you. Keep them in the sunlight. Write them down. Get them out of the darkness. Get them out of your imagination. Write them down. Get them out into the light. And then you can see how significant or insignificant they really are. And once you have named them, identified them, then make up simple categories and put them there, like in my control or out of my control. And finally, not likely to ever happen. If they are in your control, then you should take charge of them. Do your best to get them off the worry side of your ledger. Set a course of action. Setting a course of action will empower you. Do not be a victim of your worries. Allow your worries to work for you, to inspire you, and take control of your current situation. If there's something that you can do that will make that worry go away, then get on it right now. What might that look like? What might look like spending less money, or saving more, or using sunscreen, or getting marriage counseling, or writing a letter, or quit drinking, or take up exercise, or learn to forgive? Or how about making that phone call? You know how it is sometimes you're worried about a phone call, so you spend five straight days worrying about the phone call instead of just picking up the phone and getting it off the worry list? It's wasted time. Jesus said, today's trouble is enough for today. In other words, take life one step and one day at a time. Do what you need to do today and worry less about tomorrow. After all, many a man or many a woman have stayed up many a night worrying about many things that never happened. Get your worries out into the light of day. Write them down and put them in categories. In my control, then take action. But if they fall in that category that's out of my control, then pray about them and let God worry about them. Keep your heart open, but do not take responsibility for things that are out of your control. That is wasted time and wasted energy. If it is out of your control, then by definition, there's nothing you can do about it. Consequently, your worry is fruitless. It's a waste of time. And the final category, not likely to ever happen. Now, my mother was a wonderful mother, a wonderful grandmother, a wonderful person. She also was like a gold medalist when it came to worrying. She was afraid of flying, and I can't tell you how many times she was supposed to fly out here to spend time with her grandkids. She'd get to the airport, couldn't get on the plane. She was afraid of elevators. She was worried that someone was going to send her anthrax in the mail. None of those things were ever a threat to her. And most of the things that we worry about are never going to happen. People worry far more about random disasters than they should. Consider this, all of you who are afraid to go to Israel with me or afraid to travel to Europe. According to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the chances of being killed in a terrorist attack are 1 in 20 million. The odds are better that you will be killed by your own furniture. So keep your eye on your easy chair. And I put this one in for Trudy Martin. Trudy, who's in her 90s and was at the early service, told me she doesn't worry about anything. And I said, that's why you're living so long. But Trudy, I put this in for Trudy. The odds of dying in a skydiving accident are 1 in 100,000. Which is 17 times lower than the risk of dying in a car accident. So you are safer jumping out of that plane than you are driving home today. The odds of being a victim of a shark attack are about the same as dying in an elevator, roughly 1 in 11 million. See, this is about putting worry in its rightful place in our life. Jesus said, don't worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow will bring its worries of its own. Today's trouble is enough for today. Putting worry in its place. A word from Jesus, a ledger, and back to the 23rd Psalm. Out of a nugget comes a promise that will dispel our fears and allow us to walk through the trials of this world, in fact, to walk through the valley of the shadow of death. The psalm starts like this: "The Lord is my shepherd." Now, sheep without a shepherd die. They are eaten. They are dragged off by prey. They die of thirst or exposure. The psalm states that the Lord is my shepherd. And then the psalm ends by saying, "I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." It starts and ends with words of promise. But in the very middle, if you count from each side into the very middle of the psalm, are the words which calm our fears: "For you are with me." It's not an accident that it's there. It's not an accident that the psalm builds out from that middle. You see, most of the time, all we need to dispel our fears is to know that we are not alone. Most of the time, all we need to move on in life is to know that we're not alone. Most of the time, we can face our fears if we know that we're not alone. Most of the time, we can face tomorrow if we know we're not alone. Most of the time, we can muster the courage to face even our own death if we know that we're not alone. In the very middle of that familiar poem is this nugget that dispels fear, the nugget of promise and hope, a declarative word from God: "You are not alone. I am with you." And if Almighty God is with us, then what do we have to fear? Even in the darkest, scariest place of our lives, God is with us. And that's putting worry in its place. Now, on the bottom of your sermon notes are two more fill-in-the-blanks. The fill-in-the-blanks rest below the categories of the ledger. Under most worried about, under your worries, fill in the blank with these words from God: "You are not alone." And under the blessings of your life, under those things that you've identified, those things that bring a smile to your face and a bounce to your step, fill in the blank: "You are not without responsibility." Blessed to be a blessing. Every blessing comes from God, and every blessing comes with a calling to be generous. Generous in our sharing, in our forgiving, in our care of each other, in our care of creation. I don't need to do this for you. You can look at your own list. You identified them, and you might ask, "Okay, I have been given this tremendous blessing or list of blessings in my life. How can I generously share what I have been blessed with?" Putting worry in its place. You can take action. You can lift your prayers to God. You can count your blessings. Now, I'm going to give the last word to a young man from Spokane who was trying to help a young woman from Maysville, Kentucky, trying to help her to put worry in its place.
When I'm worried and I can't sleep, I count my blessings instead of sheep. I fall asleep counting my blessings. When my bankroll is getting small, I think of when I had none at all. And I fall asleep counting my blessings. I think about a nursery, and I picture curly heads, and one by one I count them as they slumber in their beds. If you're worried and you can't sleep, just count your blessings instead of sheep. You'll fall asleep counting your blessings.
Christmas. I'd invite you to stand for the hymn of the day. We'll sing together, "Seek Ye First the Kingdom of God."